Sonny Folsom has a very special moonshine concoction. The recipe is a closely guarded secret. The world couldn't handle it, Jameson said. It's important to keep it under wraps. Are you saying it makes people tell the truth? Devlin asked, clearly skeptical.
Is it anything like that stuff you fed me before you shot me into the lake? George asked, wincing.
Nah, that was just the peach cobbler brew, I said. Moonshine Truth Serum is different. It opens people right up. They'll talk your ear off and tell you every secret they've ever kept.
Do you remember when Nash took a shot of it by mistake? Jameson asked.
Who knew the big guy's favorite hobby was quilting?
Bowie said.
Or that he was the one who broke Mrs. Morgenstern's upstairs window with a baseball in junior high, Jameson said.
How is this supposed to work? Devlin asked. Because right now I'm picturing you tying him to a chair and forcing liquor down his throat.
That's why you wanted me here, isn't it? George asked, leaning away from the table like he was about to get up and leave. You want me to hold him down?
I shrugged. It shouldn't come to that. Nicolette'll serve it to him. Don't y'all remember? It's Moonshine Day, the best unofficial holiday of the year. Shots of moonshine on the house for everyone.
That could definitely be a real thing, Jonas said.
It is, but it ain't until October, Jameson replied.
Do you think he'll notice what we're doing? George asked. Get suspicious?
The thing about Moonshine Truth Serum, it hits you fast, I said. Makes you go all woozy for a minute. He'll be busy trying to figure out why his eyes won't focus, and then he'll feel great.
Nicolette on board? Jameson asked. I gave him the side eye. Do you even have to ask?
Guess not. Jameson raised his beer to Nicolette, who stood behind the bar. She gave him a solemn nod.
What do you need us to do? Bowie asked.
Backup, mostly, in case this goes south, I said.
All right, Bowie said. Let's do this.
Customers trickled in, and we spread out, filling them in on the plan. We didn't want any accidental bar brawls or other interruptions tonight. Then, all we could do was wait. I sat with Jameson at the table in the back, bouncing my leg, unable to keep still. Bowie, Dev, and Jonah nursed beers at the bar, making sure to leave a few stools open. George stayed farther back. Music played in the background, and the mood in here was subdued, tense. My edges felt sharp, but I was focused. I knew I couldn't let my temper get the best of me tonight. Flying off the handle and breaking the guy's face wasn't going to get us the answers we needed. I'd keep my shit together for Callie. I could do it for her. Finally, Lee Williams wandered in, crooked nose and all. Took a seat at the bar, just like we'd hoped. His clothes were plain, a shirt and brown pants, and I didn't see a bulge at his waistband. Hopefully he wasn't packing heat tonight. I waited to give Nicolette the signal. Let him order a beer and sit with it for a while. Didn't want to make him suspicious before we'd had a chance to get the moonshine down his throat. Jameson met my eyes, and we nodded to each other. It was time. I caught Nicolette's attention and gave her a nod.
Hey, y'all.
She lined up shot glasses and started pouring. Damn, I hoped she'd keep them straight and give Lee Williams the right one.
You know what today is. Moonshine Day. That means shots of the lookout's finest on the house.
Cheers rose up from the patrons, and her customers went to the bar to collect their shots. Nicolette pushed a shot glass at Lee. I held my breath, too far away to hear if he said anything to her. People around him downed their shots and set their glasses on the bar, thanking Nicolette.
Come on, you piece of shit. Drink it.
He lifted the shot glass to Nicolette, then tossed it back in one swallow. And then, badass bartender that she was, she grinned and poured him another. He drank that one, too.
Jameson twitched. Wait for it, I said, my voice low, eyes locked on Lee.
Nicolette started cleaning up the shot glasses. Bowie took up a spot at the end of the bar, leaning against it like he didn't have a care in the world. Jonah and Devlin went back to their stools, looking tense. Lee tilted to the side, almost falling off his stool. Bracing himself on the bar, he struggled to keep his seat. He straightened, but shook his head and started rubbing his eyes.
Now, I said quietly. I stood and wandered to the bar, taking the empty stool next to Lee.
Jameson hung back, ready to detour anyone who might try to get too close. Jonah and Devlin were on Lee's other side, and Nicolette kept on with what she was doing. Nothing unusual here.
Holy shit,
Lee muttered, still trying to shake off the initial dizzying rush of the moonshine. I leaned forward, elbows on the bar, keeping my face forward. Potent stuff.
Jesus fuck,
he said.
What the hell was that?
Bootleg moonshine ain't for the weak, I said. He glanced at me, blinking hard like he was trying to focus. Between the dim lighting and the quick dose of moonshine, he didn't seem to recognize me yet.
Guess so.
Seems like you're new around here. What do you think of bootleg?
I needed to get him answering questions so I could be sure it was working.
Small town shithole, basically.
He might have said that without the truth serum. I couldn't be sure.
Is it now? I take it you're a city boy?
Oh, yeah. Born and raised in Baltimore. Wound up in Virginia, but Richmond isn't bad. Always wanted to live in New York City, though.
I suppressed a grin. It was working all right.
You know what I hate about small towns?
He turned toward me, resting one arm on the bar, and his voice was nothing but friendly. Part of the magic of Sonny's moonshine was what it did for a person's mood, made them feel great and extremely chatty.
There's nothing to do. I'm stuck out here, bored off my ass.
That's a damn shame, I said. What are you stuck here for?
A job. It's a dead end, if you ask me, but my boss is fucking paranoid.
Huh. Paranoid about what?
Oh, man, it's a good story.
His speech slurred a little, and he jabbed a finger toward me.
I'm always up for a good story, I said, trying to seem like a friendly listener without looking at him straight on.
This guy I work for, he's a big shot, right? Dirty fucker, but he keeps his hands squeaky clean. I mean, he's good. Even kept me out of prison all these years. Anyway, some 12 or 13 years ago, his teenage daughter goes missing. Shady shit, let me tell you. He had me searching for her, but he called me off after a while. Didn't say a word to me about it for, I don't know, 10 years? I always figured she was dead.
I resisted the urge to clench my fists and made a non-committal noise. Nicolette kept acting like she was working.
Anyway, about a year ago, the kid's case gets reopened. New evidence or some shit, so he sends me out to look for her again. I come up with nothing, and he's pissed. This guy's so twisted, he wants his own kid dead.
Stay calm, Gibson. Stay calm. Shit. He wanted you to take her out?
Yep. Wouldn't be my first hit, but I don't like it. She's not a kid anymore, but still, what kind of guy does that?
Good question, but why would he want her dead? He shrugged, hiccuping.
Don't know. My guess is she knew something, and they don't want her around to tell.
You were right. It's a damn good story. Did you ever find her?
No, and here's the real rub. I made everything a hell of a lot easier for him, and he still sends me out to this crappy town. She's officially dead. We have the forensics report to prove it. Fake report, but no one's going to question it. Even if she did turn up, who would believe her? Some chick already burned that bridge when she claimed to be her.
You're shitting me.
Don't you follow the news out here?
He asked.
I guess if it doesn't involve someone driving a tractor into a fence or a chicken taking a shit in someone's roses, you people don't pay attention.
God, this fucking guy. Guess not. What happened? He proceeded to tell me all about Abby Gilbert, how she'd turned up at a hospital claiming to be his boss's missing daughter, he still hadn't said anyone's name, and how his boss had gone out to see who she was, brought her home, and told the media his daughter had been found.
Did he know it wasn't her? I asked. I mean, a guy would have to know his own daughter.
Oh, he knew. I think it was his wife's idea to use her. They figured this would close the case for them. They were getting sick of these damn investigators poking their noses everywhere.
Smart move, I said. So what'd they do? Pay her off to keep up the lie?
That's exactly what they did.
Swaying on his stool, he poked my shoulder.
Paid her a solid chunk of change and set her up out in Philly. I took her out there myself. Dumb girl thought she'd won the lottery.
What happened to her?
This is good, too,
he said, practically laughing.
So, someone outs her, right? Gets their hands on a DNA sample, don't ask me how because I don't know, and makes her come clean. So she loses her fancy apartment and the allowance they were giving her. Guess she wasn't happy because she came back and tried to blackmail them. Said she'd go to the media and tell the truth about their agreement. I'm sure you can guess how that ended.
Tell me. He made a slicing motion across his throat. Damn, I said. You have to do it?
I hired a guy, he said. It cost me a little extra, but I don't like killing girls if I don't have to.
I stopped myself from saying that hiring someone to kill a girl wasn't any different than doing it yourself. But we were so close, I just had to hold it together a little longer. I don't know, man. This all sounds like a bunch of made-up bullshit to me.
All true,
he said, putting a hand on his chest and hiccuping again.
Swear it on my mother's grave. So anyway, my boss keeps getting more and more paranoid, right? I really think he might be going off the deep end. Then he finds out some former social worker's been trying to dig up stuff on his daughter. Guess who got saddled with that problem?
You? Holy shit. He was going to tell me about Shelby's kidnapping.
Damn straight it was me. But hey, the boss man pays me good money to take care of shit like this for him.
What did you do?
It was almost too easy. I found out who she was and did some research. She had some guy stalking her a while back. He was perfect, legitimately crazy. So I tracked him down and gave him some rather specific information about her whereabouts. It was like throwing a dog a stick. He couldn't help himself.
Did it work? He hiccuped again.
Well enough, She backed off, but then it got worse again. Some local guy got hauled in for questioning about the daughter, so the boss man sends me out here to find out why. The guy's nobody, just some redneck carpenter who had an old picture of her. It was a total dead end, just like the rest of her case. I keep trying to tell him he's in the clear. We have science on our side, for fuck's sake. The dumbass lab tech was easy as shit to buy off, and after 13 years, or however long it's been, his daughter isn't going to turn up.
Sure doesn't seem like it, I said. But what does all this have to do with you being stuck out here, bored off your ass? He rolled his eyes and reached for the full beer Nicolette had quietly set in front of him.
Hey, he's convinced something is going down in this little backwoods town. Sent me out here to fill him in on all the gossip in case her name starts being mentioned again. You know, more than usual. Like maybe somebody knows something. I shouldn't complain too much, though. The drinks are good, and the women aren't bad either.
A man's got to do something to pass the time.
Damn straight.
He took a swig of beer, sloshing some in his lap. He didn't seem to notice.
I hooked up with a sweet piece of ass last night, dumb as a box of rocks, but who cares, right?
I risked a quick glance over my shoulder. Jameson was watching, wide-eyed. We were thinking the same thing.
No shit. Who was she?
He barely got the mug back on the bar.
Does it matter? She had two names. Missy something. No, that wasn't it. Misty, that's it. Misty Lynn. Oh, crooked, fake tits, hard as concrete. She wasn't a bad lay, but afterwards she wouldn't shut the hell up. Kept whining about her ex-boyfriend.
My back and shoulders knotted with tension. Huh. He shook with a sloppy, drunken laugh.
Get this. She said her ex-boyfriend's new girlfriend is my boss's fucking missing daughter, Callie Kendall. Swear to God, this town is obsessed with that girl. As if she'd be back here dating some redneck and the whole world would know. Like I said, my little side job last night wasn't blessed with much upstairs.
You passed that on to your boss? I asked, trying hard to keep the alarm out of my voice. I mean, obviously it ain't true. Probably best to keep the rumors out of it.
Nah, I told him. If he got wind that I'd heard something and hadn't let him know, ugh, he's so on edge lately, he'd probably put a hit out on me.
It ate up every scrap of willpower I had not to wrap my hands around this fucker's neck and choke him out. I couldn't even think about Misty Lynn. Damn her. A red haze tinged my vision and fire seared through my veins. Jameson casually sat on the stool on my other side and whispered, "Easy." Nicolette slid another shot glass across the bar.
"Looks like you could use another." "You know, I'm liking this town more and more," he said, grinning at her.
He tossed the shot back and winced. I waited while his eyes crossed and he held the bar like he couldn't stay upright. The rush seemed to pass, and he shook his head.
"God damn, this shit is strong!"
I ground my teeth together, my nostrils flaring. Took a breath before I trusted myself to speak. "Must be tough working for a guy like that," I said. "He has you do his dirty work, and you gotta worry about whether he'll get rid of you someday?"
I'm not too concerned. I have so much dirt on this guy, I could bury him under a mountain of it. See, I'm not stupid. I have insurance.
What sort of insurance?
Recordings, logbooks, I keep track of everything.
After 3 shots, I wasn't worried about whether he recognized me. He'd talk no matter what. He wouldn't be able to help himself. Turning on my stool, I looked him straight in the eyes. Where do you keep all that insurance? He regarded me through droopy eyelids, his jaw going slack.
Wait, I know you. You're that guy. The one with the photo of her.
Yep, but where's the insurance? You keep it locked up somewhere? He laughed again, his shoulders shaking with a drunken giggle.
It's all at home. I have a file cabinet with a lock.
Good place for it. I glanced at Nicolette. You been getting all this? She smiled and pulled my cell phone from beneath the bar, set it on top.
Every incriminating word.
Lee gaped at the phone, his mouth hanging open. Then he swiveled his head to look at me.
What's going on?
Just for shits and giggles, what's your boss's name? I'd gotten enough out of him, but I wanted to see if I could get him to say it. He closed his mouth, narrowing his eyes at me like the gears in his drunken brain were slowly turning.
His name? You're recording me, aren't you?
Yep, and West Virginia is a one-party state. I can legally record you without your knowledge, but really, who do you work for? You know you want to tell me. He hiccuped and laughed at the same time.
Judge Henry Kendall. He's the boss, man. Did I tell you he's a shady fucker? Knows how to keep his hands clean, though.
I imagine he does. I grabbed the phone and tapped the screen to stop recording and make sure it's saved. Then I held it up. You're too shit-faced to understand what just happened, but when you wake up in a jail cell in the morning, I want you to remember 2 things. 1, you told us everything we need to know to put that piece of shit judge away for good. And 2, if you slept with Misty Lynn Prosser, I suggest you get yourself tested for just about everything under the sun. Nicolette held up another cell phone.
Used both, so there's backup.
Thanks, Nicolette, I said. I owe you big for this.
Just doing my part.
I got up and nudged the swaying Lee. Where's the judge now? He burped.
Not sure. He was in Washington. Congressional hearing soon.
Is he coming out here? When you told him Misty Lynn said Callie Kendall is in bootleg, did he say he was coming?
Don't know. He wasn't happy about it, I can tell you that. Did I tell you he kept me out of prison? Dirty fucker, but he knows how to keep his hands clean. That's my job.
Fuck, I muttered. Hey, Bo, can y'all get this guy out of here? Take my phone with you and give it to the sheriff. George came up behind Bowie and cracked his knuckles. They wouldn't have any trouble lifting him into someone's car.
We got it,
Bowie said.
Where are you going?
I gotta get back. If the Kendalls might be coming.
Shit,
Jameson said. Exactly. Get this fucker in a jail cell. I left Lee Williams in the capable hands of George and my brothers and took off to find Callie. She was with my sister tonight, hardly a person alive I trusted more than Scarlet Rose. I'd gotten everything out of him. Sonny Folsom was some kind of goddamn genius, so I should have been relieved, breathing easier, but I wasn't. The Kendalls knew. Lee hadn't believed Misty Lynn, but the judge and his psycho wife would. They knew their daughter was here in Bootleg Springs, and I had a very strong feeling they were about to show up looking for her, or looking to get rid of her for good.
Chapter 39, Maya. Gibson was up to something. I didn't know what, but it was obvious. He'd spent a full 10 minutes texting earlier today. That was the equivalent of a half day of conversation for Gibbs. Then he'd left me at his house with Scarlett while he went out. He'd barely let me out of his sight since the Cox Spurs game. The only place I'd gone in the last week had been Henrietta's cabin. Since then, I'd been hiding out at Gibson's, usually with the doors locked and the windows covered. Scarlett had turned up with snacks, and we'd gotten comfortable on the couch, Cash happily napping between us. She'd spent the last hour trying to pry sordid rock star stories out of me. She was a bootlegger. Gossip hunting was in her blood. "I'm bored," she said, crumpling up a food wrapper. "I don't mean I'm bored talking to you. I just mean being here makes me bored. I feel like getting out." For the first time since arriving, I was starting to feel a little stir-crazy myself. I could stand a few hours of different scenery, but I don't think I should go into town. "I completely agree." She sat up and started typing on her phone. "What are you thinking?" "We'll bring the party to us. Outside, not in here. Gibbs has plenty of space. We'll get a good bonfire going, turn on some music. It'll be fun and totally safe." Gibson wasn't going to like Scarlett throwing a bonfire at his house, but I'd be able to make him feel better about it. If he got mad, I'd just take him inside and take off my clothes. That was a win for both of us. "Let's do it." Scarlett put the word out, and it didn't take long for people to start showing up. Cars and trucks, everything from Millie Waggle's compact sedan to Rocky Tobias's souped-up pickup, rumbled down the long drive. We picked a clear spot away from the house for a makeshift fire pit, hauled in some wood and got the blaze going. It wasn't a big fire like the ones on Scarlet's Beach, but it was cozy. More people arrived. Someone turned on music. Drinks were passed around. Cash happily darted around people's legs, his tail wagging. Scarlett Bodine could go from zero to full-fledged bonfire party in no time flat. The sound of the crackling fire, tinny country music coming from a dashboard stereo, and good-natured conversations filled the air. Sparks danced in the darkening sky. I hugged one of Gibson's flannel shirts around me. Fall had arrived in Bootleg. The leaves were turning, and the air had a bite to it. Scarlett wandered over with two beers and handed me one. "Better?" "Better, thanks. I don't feel like I'm in the witness protection program anymore."
"Now, why didn't anyone think of that?"
I glanced at her. "Think of what?"
"There were all sorts of theories about what had happened to you. Different factions, if you will. But I don't remember anyone coming up with, 'She's gone into the witness protection program.'"
"I guess that would have been close."
"This is all going to turn out fine. You know that, right?"
The beer bottle dangled from my hand. "I hope so."
"You keep right on hoping, but I'm here to tell you it will. Gibson ain't going to stop until he makes sure no one can ever hurt you again. He's a Bodine. We're not quitters."
"You're stubborn is what y'all are." She laughed.
"You ain't wrong. Sometimes it's our best quality."
"Speaking of Bodines, where are the rest of them? And where's Devlin tonight?"
"With Gibbs."
She took a swig of beer. "Scarlett," I said, my voice stern. "What are they doing?"
"I have no idea what you're referring to."
"He said he had things to do and left before I could ask questions. What's going on?" She patted my arm.
"Trust me, everything is going to be fine."
"Oh, God, he's going after Lee Williams, isn't he? Why'd you let him do that? That man has killed people."
"And I'm telling you, there's no need to worry. They have it handled."
"He picked you to babysit me because he knew you wouldn't let me leave, didn't he?" She paused with her beer halfway to her mouth and grinned.
"Maybe." "What'll you do if I try?"
"I have options," she said with a shrug.
He told me you're not to leave his property under any circumstances, and I intend to keep my word. I sighed, then took a long pull of beer. Gibson had been right to get his sister to keep me here. Going toe-to-toe with Scarlet Bodine wasn't something I had any interest in experiencing. I decided I'd trust her and stay for now. Tell you what, I'll go easy on you. I won't even try to run. I think that's smart. She winked at me and we both smiled. I stepped closer to the warmth of the fire. Cash seemed to be enjoying it. He rolled onto his back, his stocky legs sticking in the air. A slow song came on and a few couples paired off to dance. Another car rumbled down the driveway and parked, four people pouring out. I couldn't see who they were from here, but none of them were Gibson. It was hard not to worry about what he was up to. Maybe if his brothers were with him, that meant he'd be all right. Cassidy wasn't here either. Did that mean they were involving the law? That was a comforting thought. Apart from my concern for what kind of trouble Gibson might be getting himself into, I felt calm. The box in my mind wasn't just empty, it was gone. I'd released all the horrible things inside, and I'd survived. My parents hadn't broken me when I was a child, and the trauma they'd inflicted wasn't going to break me now. I still felt fear, the idea that they were out there and quite possibly wanted me dead was terrifying. I knew I'd never be completely safe until they were both behind bars. But my two halves had become whole. I wasn't Callie anymore, not the Callie of 13 years ago at least. I wasn't Maya either. I was both. I was a girl who'd been abused, a woman who'd built a new life. The demons of my past no longer festered in my mind. I'd faced the worst of them and come out on the other side. I'd survived. Oh, hell no! What is she doing here? Scarlet said. She widened her stance and crossed her arms. I did not invite Skankzilla. Misty Lynn stood on the other side of the fire, holding a lit cigarette between two fingers. Her teased-out hair looked like it had been hairsprayed into granite, and despite the chill in the air, she wore a bright yellow halter top and denim miniskirt.
Bless your heart, Misty Lynn, Scarlet said. Did you have to give up your nicotine patches while you finished your chlamydia meds?
Misty Lynn made a dramatic show of rolling her eyes. She walked around the fire and stood in front of Scarlet, took a long drag from her cigarette, and blew the smoke in Scarlet's face. Scarlet waved her hand in front of her.
Get your cancer stick out of here! And I swear to all that's holy, if you leave a single cigarette butt on my brother's property, I'll give you a missing tooth to go with that crooked nose. Shut your damn mouth! It's bad enough your daddy's old whore is trying to sink her claws into my dad. I don't need you mouthing off at me, too.
I dropped my beer and threw my arms around Scarlet's middle, dragging her out of arm's reach before she gouged Misty Lynn's eyes out.
Don't you dare talk about Jenny like that, you dirty homewrecker!
Go home, Misty Lynn, I said. You're just out here trying to make trouble, and we don't need any more of that. Misty Lynn stuck a hand on her hip and took another drag from her cigarette.
You ain't special, you know. You probably think you are because the stupid people in this stupid town kept your posters up for so long. But they were wrong about you. You're not the town's sweetheart. You're a filthy liar.
Scarlet squirmed against my grasp. I was going to lose her.
Can I get a little help here?
Nash jogged over, his thick arms like tree trunks stuffed in flannel. He eyed us warily.
Come on, Nash, just hold on to her for a minute, I said. I'm gonna kill her, Scarlet snarled.
Crap on a cracker, Nash muttered, getting his arms around her so I could extricate myself.
Scarlet, don't blame me for this.
Let go of me, Nash! It's about time someone served up some bootleg justice on that lying, cheating piece of bleached-out, fake-boobed garbage.
Go home, Misty Lynn, I said again. She tried to flick her cigarette toward me, but it wound up flying into the fire.
You think you can just waltz back into town with your ugly purple hair, wearing the same dress every other day? Do you even own another one? This from the girl who's been wearing the same tube tops and ratty leggings since 7th grade, Scarlett said. Misty Lynn wasn't paying attention to Scarlett, and I had a feeling trading insults with Gibson's sister wasn't why she'd come out here.
Gibson doesn't know what's good for him, she said, her eyes on me.
You think that's you? I asked.
Better than you, she said. At least I didn't trick a whole town into believing I'm someone else.
Why was I even having this conversation? What's your point? Something in her expression changed, her heavily mascaraed eyes narrowing, the corner of her mouth tilting upward. It was like she could sense she wasn't getting to me and had just thought of a new angle.
I had him first, you know.
Had him? I asked. What you did was fake your way into his life for a very short time when he was too young and dumb to see you for what you are. And then you cheated on him after his mother died, instead of holding on to him and loving him through one of the worst times of his life. You kicked him when he was down. I don't know if you're trying to make me jealous, but it won't work. There's nothing to be jealous of. Misty Lynn crossed her arms, but I turned toward the sound of tires tearing down the long drive. Gibson's truck spat gravel as he slammed on the brakes. He hopped out and ran toward us, rushing straight toward me.
Gibbs, don't be mad, Scarlett said, shrugging out of Nash's grip. We just wanted something fun to do while we...
I ain't mad at you, Scar, he said, his eyes on me. I need to talk to you now.
Where's everyone else? Scarlett asked.
Going to see the sheriff. Get everyone out of here. This ain't the time.
His gaze swung around and landed on Misty Lynn. I'd seen Gibson angry. I'd seen him so far gone with rage he'd bloodied his own knuckles. But I'd never seen his face like this.
Get her off my property, he growled.
You ain't still mad about the wallet thing, are you? Misty Lynn asked.
He stared her down, fists clenched, and I had no idea how Misty Lynn wasn't wilting under the intensity of his gaze. I'd never been afraid of Gibson, but if I'd been in her shoes, I would have been. Maybe she was just too stupid to realize how close he was to snapping.
Go, I said. Party's over anyway.
This is on you,
Gibson said, his voice low and dangerous.
If they fucking hurt her, it's on you.
I gently touched his arm. Gibbs, what are you talking about?
She squealed on us.
What?
She went back to Lee's motel with him last night. Told him who you are. Use your real name.
Everything seemed to move in slow motion. I was vaguely aware of Scarlett's screeching war cry, Nash's grunt as he grabbed her around the waist, Misty Lynn's crispy hair backlit by the fire. But all I could feel was rage. A hot surge of anger so deep and so potent, I didn't even try to fight it. I went supernova. With two fast steps, I was on her, my arm already cocked, my fist closed. I swung from my hip, twisting at the waist, channeling every bit of strength I had through my arm and into my hand. My punch connected with the back of her jaw, just below the ear. I felt no pain. Just the satisfying collision of my knuckles smashing into her face. She spun with the force of my blow, and it looked like her legs instantly turned to jelly. She crumpled to the ground in a heap.
Chapter 40. Gibson. Misty Lynn didn't move. Her legs buckled, and she dropped to the dirt, out cold. Caught between shock and pride, I stared at Callie. She'd just knocked out Misty Lynn with one swing. A second ago, I'd been so mad I couldn't see straight. I didn't hit women, but I'd been an inch away from hauling Misty Lynn bodily off my property. And then Callie had laid her out. Holy shit, I said in awe. Ow, Callie winced, clutching her hand to her chest. Crap, that hurt. That jerked me out of my stupor. Ignoring the cheers that rose up around the fire, I led Callie toward the house. Scarlet followed close behind, with Cash right on her heels. We got inside, and I shut and locked the door behind us.
Oh my God, I'm a tiny bit in love with you right now, Scarlet said.
She went for the freezer to get ice. Callie kept her hand cradled against her chest.
I can't believe I just did that. I've never punched anyone before. That had to have felt good.
Scarlet cracked the tray to loosen the ice cubes.
Did you see the way she collapsed? She was out before she hit the ground. Yeah, it did feel good, actually,
Callie said with a weak smile. Cash sat right at her feet, looking up at her like he was worried. I gently took Callie's hand and turned it palm down so I could see the damage. Not too much swelling, which was a good sign. Can you move it? She wiggled her fingers.
It hurts, but I don't think I broke anything.
Scarlet handed me a bag of ice and a paper towel. I took Callie to the couch and held her hand, carefully laying the ice on top. Cash jumped up and put his head in her lap.
Thank you,
she said, absently petting Cash with her good hand. Remind me not to get on your bad side. She laughed.
Yeah, you better not mess with me. Damn, I wish someone had been recording that,
Scarlet said, flopping down into a chair.
I'd watch it every morning just to put me in a good mood. Do you think she's okay?
I glanced toward the curtained front window.
Someone'll drag her dumbass home,
Scarlet said.
If you loosened a few teeth, that's her problem. She deserves worse.
Callie met my eyes.
Where were you?
Still holding the ice on her hand, I told her everything about the moonshine truth serum, all the things Lee had said. We had it all, the truth about everything. It was more than enough to get the FBI involved. I was sure of it.
That worked as well as expected,
Scarlet said.
Well done, Gibbs. Where's he now?
Callie asked. Probably sleeping off the moonshine in a jail cell by now. He's in for one hell of a hangover when he wakes up.
Yep,
Scarlet said.
Dev just texted me and said the package has been delivered. They're all on their way here.
Good.
So what happens now?
Scarlet asked.
When do all the black, unmarked cars roll up to the Kendall's place, wherever the heck they are, and haul them off to prison?
Not soon enough for me, I said. The sheriff is going to do everything he can to get the FBI in on this, but I don't know how long it's going to take.
Which means what?
Scarlet asked.
A day? A week? More?
Damn, this was frustrating. I don't know. We can ask Harlan what he thinks tomorrow.
Too long,
Callie said.
Because the Kendalls know I'm here. Maybe they'll leave it be until after the hearing,
Scarlet said, her voice lilting slightly, as if she was trying to sound hopeful. Callie stared ahead of her like she was seeing through the wall.
I think they'll come.
I didn't want to make her feel worse, but I did too. Lee had said the judge was acting paranoid, going off the deep end. If the judge was a reasonable man who felt in control of his fate, he'd probably leave his lackey to keep an eye on things here and focus on all the politics, rubbing elbows with senators or whatever he was doing. But I didn't think the judge was a reasonable man who felt in control of his fate. I'd have put money on him being a man who'd spent the first 12 years of his daughter's disappearance with fear in the back of his head, fear that she'd turn up and tell the world what he and his wife had done to her. A man who'd spent the last year since her sweater had been found constantly trying to put out fires, trying to keep them from burning down his whole life. And now the thing he feared most was on the cusp of coming true. Callie was back in Bootleg Springs.
"We need to go to the press," Callie and I said at the same time. She laughed. "What? I was ready to argue with you."
"You're right," I said. "It's time. If the Kendalls come to Bootleg Springs, it'll be because they're afraid you're going to go public and ruin them, so let's fucking do that."
"Okay, we go to the press."
My family started showing up, one couple after another. There wasn't much more to talk about. They all agreed we were probably right to go public, even Cass, and I assured her we'd run it by Harlan and Jamie, but at this point, it seemed inevitable.
"Well, we can sit in here and feel glum, or we can go out and enjoy the fire,"
Scarlett said.
"I vote fire."
Everyone agreed, and we poured out of my cabin into the cool night. The fire had burned down, but we got it going again, and for a little while, it kind of felt like everything was fine. Like maybe we were just out here doing what bootleggers did, enjoying an evening with friends and family beneath the stars. Callie stared into the fire, her forehead creased with worry. I wandered over to her and brushed the hair back from her face. "What's wrong?" She looked past me.
"I just keep wondering what would have happened if I hadn't come back here. I brought all this trouble on everyone."
"Honey, what are you talking about?" She took a deep breath.
"What if it doesn't work? What if people don't believe me, or they can't use the evidence they find for some reason? My father's been getting away with everything for so long. He'll have contingency plans or, I don't know, something. Then what? I'll never be safe, and neither will you or your family or this town. What if everything goes wrong and we look back and realize your life would have been so much better if I just stayed away? If Callie Kendall had stayed dead?"
I took her face in my hands. "Don't you ever say that. You hear? Nothing would have been right if you hadn't come back. If this goes to shit, we'll figure it out." Her lips turned up in a weak smile. I kissed her forehead. "Besides, my life was boring as hell before you showed up."
"Yeah?"
I gave her a little grin. "I think the highlight was when we found out Devlin got Scarlett's name tattooed on his ass and the artist spelled it wrong."
"I regret everything about that, especially telling you assholes,"
Devlin said.
"How could you regret everything about your cute little butt tattoo?"
Scarlett asked.
"It says my name on a rose."
"Oh, God, there's a flower too?"
Bowie asked.
"That's more information about Devlin's ass than any of us needed."
Devlin pointed at me with his beer.
"Gibson brought it up."
"You're the one who lost the bet,"
Scarlett said, crossing her arms.
"It ain't right for you to complain about it now."
Callie laughed.
"Who'd you lose a bet to?"
Scarlett grinned, looking proud.
"Me, of course."
"Can we stop talking about my ass, please?"
Devlin asked.
"If you're going to have to live with your future wife's name permanently misspelled on your body, at least it's on your posterior,"
June said.
"Very few people will see it."
"Until we pants you next time we're all at the Rusty Reef,"
Jameson said.
"You're all assholes,"
Devlin said, but he was trying to hide a grin. He knew my brothers were fucking with him. Mostly. Best of all, Callie was perking up.
"Is her name really spelled wrong?"
she asked.
"Yeah,"
Devlin said with a roll of his eyes.
"The guy spelled it with an I-T-T, not E-T-T.
Scarlett went for his waistband.
"Here, look. Yeah, don't take my pants off,"
Devlin said with a hearty laugh, twisting so she couldn't drop his drawers.
I was just going to show her that it isn't really that bad. At first glance, you can't even tell, and the rose is real pretty.
Callie covered her mouth to stifle a laugh.
That's okay. I don't need to see it. I was just going to tell you, I know a tattoo artist who does incredible work. I bet he could fix it for you. He's up in Blue Moon, but it would be worth the drive.
Thanks, my... Callie, Devlin said. I guess we can call you by your real name now. She smiled.
Yeah, it feels good, like I can be me again. Although, that reminds me, I have no idea how I'm going to explain this to my boss.
You should invite him out here to visit,
Scarlett said.
Introduce him around town. I bet it'll help clear things up.
She makes a good point,
Cassidy said.
Bootleg Springs is a place that needs to be experienced to be understood. That's actually a good idea. I know he'd love to meet you.
She poked my chest. He won't try to talk me into some record deal, will he? Callie ran her hand down my chest.
He might nudge you a little, but he won't push hard. He's a man who knows how to take no for an answer and not let it hurt his ego.
I hate him less already. She laughed and I pulled her against me, wrapped my arms around her. I kissed the top of her head and held her close. I don't care what happens. I wouldn't trade this for anything, I said quietly. Before you, my life wasn't much. Now I have everything, and you can be damn sure I'm gonna fight to keep it. Slipping her arms around my waist, she rested her head against my chest and took a deep breath.
I love you so much, Gibson Bodine.
I love you too, Callie. Everything's gonna turn out okay, I promise.
Chapter 41. Maya. The mood in the brunch club was serious, despite the stack of bacon and egg pastries on the table. I sat near the back with a wall of men blocking my view of most of the cute little restaurant. George, Devlin, Jameson, Jonah, Bowie, Buck, Sonny Fulson, Nash, and Jimmy Bob Prosser all stood in a curved row, partially surrounding my table while we waited for my press conference. Jenny sat with me, alternately giving my hand, then Gibson's, reassuring squeezes, like she couldn't help momming us both. I appreciated it, and the sweetest thing was, I could tell Gibson did too. He didn't let many people touch him, other than me and our dog, but he let her. He didn't pull away or glare at her or cross his arms so she couldn't reach his hand. He left it sitting out like he was inviting her to keep loving on him a little. It made me love both of them even more. The Bodine's family lawyer, Jamie, tapped the toe of her stiletto. She stood with arms crossed, her attention on her phone. She was sleek and intimidating in her black pantsuit. Although she wasn't here for me, she was here as legal representation for the Bodines, her mildly threatening presence was oddly comforting. At least she was on our side. The media turnout wasn't big, but we hadn't expected it to be. The way Bootleg had fooled so many bloggers and journalists last winter made a lot of them reluctant to come back, especially for anything related to the Callie Kendall story. And Sheriff Tucker had been adamant about not leaking too much information, even in an effort to get more reporters to come. He wasn't sure about going to the press at all. Said he'd rather we wait until the FBI had a chance to review the evidence and arrest the Kendalls. He didn't know my parents like I did. They were coming. I could feel it, as if the fall winds carried the stench of their evil all the way to West Virginia. If I told the world who I was, if people knew and words started to spread, at least they wouldn't be able to have me killed and sweep my death under the rug. I needed more than the people of Bootleg Springs to know I was alive. And I had no doubt they wanted me gone. I'd always known. From the moment I'd walked out the door and run away from home, I'd known what it meant. I just had to hope the FBI would move in on them soon, and that the case would stick, and they'd both go to prison, hopefully forever. For now, I told myself we didn't need a lot of journalists here. Once I made my public statement, and we showed my DNA results proving who I was, word would spread. We'd help it along. Leah May was already poised to post the story in 100 different places online. She had bloggers on standby all over the country, waiting for the big news out of Bootleg Springs. The door opened, but I couldn't see past the wall of bootleg men. "Y'all about ready?" It was Scarlett's voice. Jenny reached over and squeezed Gibson's hand again, then mine. "You're going to do great." "Thanks, Jenny," I said, "for everything." The men parted like an automatic door. Gibson shadowed me as I walked outside, his imposing presence palpable behind me. I clutched a stack of index cards with what I wanted to say written on them. I didn't want to let my nerves get the best of me and forget everything in the face of the crowd, because a crowd there was. It looked like all of Bootleg Springs had come to Jinriki Park, gathering in front of the makeshift podium Mayor Augie had erected this morning. The wooden platform was slightly more official-looking than the crate in old Jefferson Waverly's barn. Speakers had been set up, and a microphone was ready on a metal stand. My stomach fluttered, and not in the good way. Those nervous butterflies flapped their wings so hard they whipped up a tornado in my belly. Suddenly, that breakfast Shelby had talked me into eating this morning seemed like it might have been a terrible mistake. Gibson's gentle touch on my back instantly calmed the storm. I realized I'd stopped walking.
"You're gonna be just fine," he said quietly into my ear. His low voice washed over me like cool water on a hot summer day. "I'll be with you the whole time."
"Thank you," I whispered, took a deep breath, and kept walking. The crowd hushed as I made my way to the podium. Mayor Augie and Sheriff Tucker stepped up behind the microphone. A knot of journalists stood in front. Everyone from the editor of the Bootleg Springs Gazette and a reporter from the local news station, complete with the camera guy, to a handful of journalists and bloggers with nothing but cell phones. Behind them, most of Bootleg Springs. I waited behind the podium with Gibson. Next to him stood his family, Scarlett and Devlin, Jonah and Shelby, Jameson and Leah May, and Bowie with a uniformed Cassidy. A united front. Jamie bookended them on the other side, her fierce gaze scanning the crowd. George stood with June, his parents, and Nadine Tucker. They were up front, but off to the side, as were Jenny and Jimmy Bob. Seeing their friendly faces was comforting. Mayor Augie stepped up to the mic. With a fist to his mouth, he turned and cleared his throat before beginning.
"Thank you all for coming. We have important news to share today. Without any ado, I'll turn things over to Sheriff Harlan Tucker."
My eyes scanned the crowd. Lee Williams was safely locked up in the Bootleg Springs jail. But I hadn't heard a word about the Kendalls. Gibson's family had taken turns driving by their house on Speakeasy Drive this morning, but the driveway had remained empty. No one had seen them pull into town. Even if they'd arrived, they couldn't have been among the faces of Bootleg Springs. The town would have gone into an uproar. But I couldn't help looking for them, fear knotting my belly. Maybe I'd never have to see them. Maybe they'd stay in Washington and be arrested there. They'd go to trial, and there would be so much evidence against them, my statement would be enough. I wouldn't have to testify. I wouldn't have to look at my mother's cold, dead eyes ever again. Gibson squeezed my shoulder, jerking me back to reality. Harlan was about to speak.
"It's my pleasure to bring you this announcement," he said, his voice steady.
There has been a significant development in the case of Callie Kendall. 13 years ago, she went missing from our town. Recently, it was reported that her body had been identified. I'm here to tell you that report is false. Callie Kendall is not dead. She's alive and well, and she'd be happy to tell you so herself.
Instead of the surprised gasps of the secret town meeting, the residents of Bootleg cheered. Applause rose from the crowd. People whooped and hollered. Shrill whistles rang through the air. It made my breath catch in my throat. I loved these people so much, I didn't know what to do with myself. Most of the journalists turned, pointing cameras and cell phones behind them, recording the town's reaction. Gibson took my hand and gave it a tight squeeze, then let go. I stepped up to the mic on the podium. "Thank you," I said, my voice projecting through the big speakers. "My name is Callie Kendall." Cheers erupted again, and I had to stop until the whooping, hollering, and whistling died down. "I disappeared from Bootleg Springs 13 years ago. I'm sure your first question is whether I can prove it. After all, there's a forensics report that says I'm dead. And a woman already tried to claim she was me. I can assure you, I'm the real Callie Kendall." Sheriff Tucker handed me the DNA report, and I held it up. "This is DNA evidence proving my identity. I've had it verified and notarized. Copies will be made available. But this is irrefutable proof that I am who I say I am." I had the attention of the journalists now. None of this was news to the Bootleg crowd, but they still listened with rapt attention. Sheriff Tucker took the DNA report, and I adjusted the index cards. 13 years ago, I ran away from home. My parents, Judge Henry Kendall and Imogen Kendall, were abusing me. I still bear the scars of their abuse." I touched my face, calling attention to the scar on my cheek. "I left in fear for my life. Jonah Bodine Sr. and his wife Connie helped me that night. Mr. Bodine has been wrongfully accused of kidnapping, harming, or even murdering me. I would like to set the record straight, once and for all, that Mr. Bodine did none of those things. He and his wife were heroes to me. They saved a terrified, wounded child and risked themselves to get her to safety. For that, I will always be grateful." Another cheer rose up from the crowd, people shouting Jonah and Connie's names. I glanced over my shoulder at Gibson and his family. Emotion shone on all their faces. Gibson met my eyes and nodded. I turned back to the mic. "I was taken somewhere safe, where kind people cared for me and helped me heal. I grew into adulthood and struck out on my own with a new name. And until recently, I thought I'd left everything about my life as Callie behind. I was traveling out of the country for my job when my missing persons case was reopened last year. It wasn't until recently that I became aware of all the new developments. I stayed hidden for all those years to protect myself. But I can't hide any longer. Too much is at stake. There are many parts of this that I can't comment on because they're a part of a larger ongoing investigation. Justice still needs to be served. But I'm here today to share the truth. My name is Callie Kendall, and I'm very much alive. Thank you." The town cheered again as I stepped away from the mic. Sheriff Tucker took my place, giving me a proud smile. The journalists swarmed toward the podium, everyone suddenly very interested in this story, hands shot in the air and many shouted questions. "I'm afraid we can't answer any more questions due to the sensitive nature of this investigation," Sheriff Tucker said. "But thank y'all for being here."
"Let's go," Jamie said, her voice sharp. She motioned for us to follow.
She'd insisted we have an exit plan, and she'd been right. Journalists were already trying to get past Sheriff Tucker and his deputies. Jimmy Bob and George casually strode forward to help block our escape. We quick walked back to the brunch club where the private room was waiting for us. Gibson gathered me in his arms, crushing me against his chest.
Honey, I'm so proud of you.
Closing my eyes, I melted into him. I'd taken the final step and told the world who I was. A potent sense of relief washed over me. I could finally be me again. I never could have done that without you, I said quietly.
I don't know about y'all, but I feel like a wrung-out wash rag, Scarlett said, plopping into a chair. How are you holding up, Callie?
Gibson's arms loosened enough for me to turn toward her. I'm okay, actually. I think it went well.
It was perfect, Cassidy said.
Any word on the Kendalls? Gibson asked.
Not that I know of, Cassidy said. Dad was up half the night talking to the FBI. They're taking it seriously. That's the good news. But they're not exactly texting him the play-by-play. I don't think we'll hear anything until they make an arrest.
A low growl rumbled in Gibson's throat.
I think it's working, Leah May said, looking up from her phone. Bits of your statement are already being reported at some of the smaller news sites. It's only a matter of time before the big ones pick up the story.
You know what we need now? Scarlett asked. A platter of bad-for-you food and a couple pitchers of mimosas.
That sounded perfect to me. An hour and a half later, we'd all soothed our rough nerves with a good meal. Jamie declared the situation stable and left. I wondered if the Bodines were going to need a family lawyer anymore. The civil suit the Kendalls had filed would be dropped. Jonah Bodine Sr. was no longer a person of interest in a missing persons case. The truth was in the open now. Jameson, Leah May, Jonah, and Shelby went out on a quick walk through town to see what was happening, if anything. They returned to report the crowd at Jinriki Park had dispersed. Shelby saw the local news crew packing up their van. It looked like most of the reporters and bloggers had left, probably back to their offices or laptops in a race to be among the first to break the news. They said the town seemed its usual self, a little quieter than summer, but they'd spotted Gert, Cassidy, and June's Gram-Gram having a heated argument with her frenemy, Mert, on the corner outside Yeehaw Yarn and Coffee. Wade Zirkle's fancy new 4x4 had broken down in the middle of Lake Drive, and he'd been walking laps around it, scratching his head like he had no idea what to do. Mona Lisa McNugget had somehow gotten stuck on the roof of her coop, and Bex and Fanny Sue had been busy trying to coax her down. Just a typical bootleg Springs afternoon. Gibson leaned back, his arms slung over the back of my chair. He absently ran his fingers through my hair while we listened to Bowie spin a tall tale-style story about great-granddaddy Jedediah Bodine and his famous bootlegging shenanigans. With our meal wrapped up and the press conference over, it was time to go home and wait. Gibson seemed reluctant to put more than 2 inches of space between us, even standing guard outside the ladies' room while I went in. His family wandered out onto the sidewalk, still chatting. He led me outside with an arm around my shoulders. I couldn't wait to get back to Gibson's house, to the space and solitude. I wanted to get in bed and hunker down with him beneath the covers, close my eyes and lose myself in him. Shut out the world and pretend it didn't exist for a little while. Angry voices across the street made me turn. There was a commotion outside Moonshine. At first, I wondered if Gram-Gram and Mert's little spat had spun out of control, but then I saw the beige Lexus with Virginia plates parked down the street.
It's them, I said. They're here.
Gibson's arm shot around my waist like he was about to pick me up and carry me to his truck. The chatter around me faded, a ripple running through our little group. and then I saw them. Judge Kendall stood outside Moonshine, dressed in a crisp button-down shirt. He looked so much older than I remembered. His hair was thinning, and he wore wire-rimmed glasses. When I was young, he'd only worn glasses for reading. And her, she'd aged as well. The lines around her eyes were deeper, not smile lines. Imogen Kendall hadn't smiled enough to earn the pleasant-looking marks of a life well-lived. Hers angled downward, both from her eyes and the corners of her mouth. They were both well-dressed, impossibly tidy without a wrinkle or a hair out of place. And in the moment that our eyes met, when they saw me for the first time in 13 years, neither of them smiled. Not in that half second of recognition. Not until the shock appeared to wear off, and they seemed to recall they had an audience. My mother gasped, clutching her chest. My father stepped close and held her shoulders as if she needed him to keep her upright. The world seemed to go silent. Conversations among neighbors on the street ceased. The people who'd started to gather around my parents halted, their eyes darting around as if they weren't sure what to do. Even the air felt still, like Bootleg Springs itself held its breath, waiting to see what would happen. "Oh my God," my mother said, her dead eyes locked on me. "Callie, is it true? Is it really my daughter?"